Porque com essa dia, qualquer momento fica mais gostoso. Do café da manhã até a hora da novela. Então, bora pra mais um episódio.
Olá, bem-vindos. Boa noite. Para alguns, a expressão bom banqueiro ainda é um oxímoro, uma contradição entre termos. Pois eis aqui um banqueiro que não só contraria o senso comum, como ganhou um Nobel da Paz pelo banco que criou. Jovem professor de ciências econômicas, ele falava aos alunos sobre milhões de dólares, mas quando saía da classe, na vida real, dava-se conta que muitas vezes a diferença entre dignidade e pobreza é de um punhado de centavos. Antes dele, os pobres eram desprezados na hora de os bancos emprestarem, darem crédito. E crédito, lembrem-se, é a relação de confiança e fé que funda o capitalismo e, em consequência, muda a história do mundo. Pois bem, no final dos anos 70, ele abriu as portas de seu banco para quem nunca tinha entrado em um. O Grameen Bank, ou Banco da Vila, o Banco Rural. Isso num país miserável, oitavo mais populoso do planeta, mas do tamanho do Ceará, Bangladesh. O conceito que o professor criou, o microcrédito, é mais e melhor do que uma revolução. E parte de uma ideia simples, dar empréstimos pequenos para os mais necessitados, que precisam de muito pouco para sair da necessidade. Assim, ele transformou a vida de milhões de pessoas, mulheres principalmente. De herói nacional, ele se tornou, nos últimos anos, inimigo número um do governo. Pode ser preso, mas não parece intimidado. Agora, ele quer criar um mundo de três zeros. Zero pobreza, zero desemprego e zero emissão de carbono. Aos 83 anos, ainda é o mesmo professor inconformado das salas de aula de décadas atrás. O banqueiro dos pobres, Muhammad Yunus. Shagoto, is that the right way to say it?
That's the right word. This is indeed. I was very surprised.
So happy to have you here,
Wonderful
Professor.
Wonderful to be with your show. Thank you very much.
I must ask a Nobel Peace Prize winner. We're witnessing another war in the Middle East, and some believe that that problem, that trouble area, will only be resolved when prosperity arrives. This was the way Europe solved a millennium of wars. Do you think that's the way?
No, I don't think so. Prosperity for whom? That's a basic issue. You say prosperity is coming to Brazil, but for whom is this coming? Prosperity for Brazil. And when prosperity comes to a country, most of the time, or almost all the time, it's prosperity for few people at the top. Bottom people's life changed very little. So structure of economy that we have built around the world is a kind of a sucking machine. It sucks wealth from the bottom. The more successful, more prosperous you are, more wealth you create, but it all goes to the top in the hands of fewer and fewer people. Even at the top, not many. If you had 100 today, next year it will be 50 or 30. But owning larger and larger amount of wealth for themselves. So the bottom people's life changes very slightly. So the prosperity has a habit of going up. It doesn't stay on.
But what's the alternative?
Alternative is to change the system. If the machine is sucking wealth from the bottom and putting it in the top, we have to build a system, build a machine, which brings the wealth from the top to the bottom.
Through capitalism?
Capitalism is what it's doing now. That's not what is going to work. So you have to think about something else, which is different. Not the same thing that we do. But that's why we come up with the other alternatives. One of the things that I have been promoting through my experiences and sharing with people by saying capitalism is fundamentally wrong because it invites people to seek job, turn into job seekers. We have to have employment. More employment you create, more successful you are. I said, no, that's not true. Employment is not the destiny of human being. Human beings are born with lots of creative capacity, lots of energy to do things on their own, because each individual is complete with enormous capacity. But the moment you accept a job, you're disconnected from your creativity.
So you're saying that we must rely in entrepreneurial.
Absolutely. Spirit. Human beings are basically are entrepreneurs. That's what the human beings are. If you are creative, you are an entrepreneur. So why should you take a job to do perform something for a small amount of money and spend the rest of the life? Never discover yourself who you are. We send our children to school to work hard, get good degrees so that they can get a good job. Getting a job is the end of life. I said, that's not the end of life. It should be the other way.
It's a false sense of security.
Absolutely.
Yes. But listen, which is the main enemy, poverty or inequality?
It's the same thing.
Oh, not really.
Inequality is expressing in a different way. Inequality means somebody got a lot, somebody got a little.
Because when you call people to mobilize around inequality, there's a huge response.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing when you call, let's fight poverty.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that appeal. Well, how do you explain that?
Explain is how you translate this inequality thing is all about. Inequality is somebody get everything, somebody else didn't have anything. Inequality. So you said,
even in inequality,
maybe they have something for themselves comfortable. They are not dead, I mean, extremely poor. They have a job, they can perform, they have a security, life security and so on, taken care of themselves, but not a life. But the top income is top wealth is a huge wealth. So that's inequality. These are not poor, but very close to poor, but not poor. So poverty is not touching them. The moment you say poverty is still, they are way down below. COVID-19 made it very clear for us. During COVID-19,
we
remember?
Thought we were equal facing the virus, and
exactly,
we were not.
It was not. And you remember during the COVID-19, one of the things, first thing that happened, people who are just above the poverty line, they are pushed into poverty right away. And those who are in poverty, they are in further poverty. The whole world population was pressed downwards further and further. Well, in the same period, 2.5 years, in the same period, few people made trillions of dollars.
17 years ago, when you did your speech accepting the Nobel Prize, right, you said that as we, humankind could reach the moon, so we can do whichever we wish to.
Exactly.
But that means that we don't want to get rid of poverty.
We ignore it completely. We just use a few words and move on with their life. Our structure, we don't touch the structure. The machine, which, as I said, pushes
well. In whose interest?
Everybody at the top. Those who are beneficiary of the system, those interests. The more wealth you make, still you're not satisfied. You want to make more wealth. If you have a million, you want to go to a billion. If you have a billion, you want to go to a trillion. So you never say, oh, I have enough, let everybody else have that. You don't stop that.
What happened to those that were benefited by your revolution?
Yeah.
The microloans, like the 40 people you chose to lend. Okay. 40 people, is that?
That's it.
$27.
$27, yeah.
What happened to them?
They changed their life because they started it. And first take the $20, then $40, and $100, and kept on making it. They have open up the door of entrepreneurship. That's what I'm saying. Human beings are creative. Give them the opportunity, open the door. They will take care of themselves. Today, poverty is about shutting down the door. And I've been talking about making bonsai. A human being became bonsai. You know, take the best seed of the tallest tree. You put it in a flower pot. It was a little tree, beautiful tree, just like the one, big one, but tiny one. And you wonder what's wrong with this tree. You get the best seed, you planted it in your flower pot, but you become this. It become this big, it doesn't grow because you didn't give them enough soil to grow. So the human beings, poor people, are bonsai people. There's nothing wrong with the seed. The seed is perfect as everybody else. Mm-hmm. But society never gave them the space to grow as big as they could be. So microcredit that we brought opened a little more space for themselves and then grew a little bit. But they're not the ideal. They have not reached the top yet. You have to open more and more space for them. So we created something as a business. They pay, I give them, and they repay it, and they move on. I pay more, they get one more step, they go. So it doesn't cost me anything. It's a business deal. So that's what I'm saying. You can be doing business, but you change the world by doing that. Only thing we brought in, because it has a conflict with the loan shark, they want to become loan shark, give little money to the poor people and make a lot of money out of the poor people. That's loan sharking. We said, no, microcredit is not loan sharking. Microcredit is a social business. We go there not to make money for ourselves, just to cover the cost.
And your business as a banker, how do you make a living if you're not based in if you're not interested in profit?
Then you wonder, how do you leave a living out of it?
Yeah.
Said, okay, we are saying we don't take profit, but we don't say we don't take salary. Mm-hmm. I'm working for you, so pay me a salary. A salary that somebody who would be providing that service would be entitled to take. So I make a living out of my salary if that's okay for me. I don't want to make profit, which is extra than the salary will give me.
Reminds me of the three zeros quote in your new book. Zero poverty, zero unemployment, zero carbon emissions.
Right.
There's something about the per capita impact, environmental impact of each one of us.
Right.
And it relates somehow of how much do we need to live a decent life.
That's right.
So you're actually provoking some very profound thoughts and reflections.
I hope so.
What are the reasons, objective reasons, you have nowadays to dare to call yourself an optimist?
I'm not only optimist, I call myself compulsive optimist. I don't give up.
I must tell you that I refuse to call myself an optimist. I say, I have hope.
No, I'm an optimist, and I have all the hope, 100% and plus. So,
name me some of the objective reasons for that.
The reason is I see hope, I see changes. You see, 45 years back when I was doing the microcredit, I was not sure what it is all about. And people said, this is something which is not going to work. This is a stupid thing to do. Everybody's kind of feeling uncomfortable.
Very skeptical,
that's the word, very skeptical. Now, 45 years later, I'm talking to you, coming to Sao Paulo. See? You are asking me questions, I'm responding.
Recognized all over the world.
Exactly. So that's optimism. I can walk into any university in the world. And I say, look, I'm the one who is doing you microcredit. Oh, yeah, that's the guy. They immediately recognize me. But this is a message which clicks with people, any type of people, where you are an absolutely big moneymaker capitalist, you want to, even that mind gets a little bit of kind of say, yeah, that's not a bad idea. It says, this is good, that's a good capitalism. He will say, this is good capitalism. He will not say that it is something else. So this is what it is. So I will say, I have a very good reason to be optimist. At that speed, I said, we can accomplish the thing about the three zeros that we are talking about, mm-hmm. if we believe in it. If we believe in it, we can make it happen.
But tell me, what one of the things that became evident with your work is that poor people are very good payers. They don't fail. Why is it so? Because I refuse to admit that rich is bad, poor is good. So explain, what is it?
I will modify your statement that poor people are always good pair.
Uh-huh.
You can create an institution. It is the quality of the institution, not the quality of the people. The same poor people will behave very wrongly if the institution you bring to them couldn't care less whether they are paying back or not, they are busy or something else, they'll be not paying back. But if you create something which works for them and excites them, they will pay every penny of it.
You build trust.
We build the trust.
Which is a synonym to credit.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's how we
believe.
Believe, yes.
Give credit.
Now the whole credit institutions around the world is built on distrust. They believe only on their lawyers. They bring the lawyers, sign papers, pages of pages, because I don't trust you. I want to take you to the court. and punish you for not behaving the way I want you to behave. See, that's not the credit we are talking
no
about.
No way to begin any relationship.
Absolutely, any relationship. Yeah.
Excuse me for the Portuguese. O Grameen Bank e o Nobel tornaram o Yunus mundialmente conhecido. Ganhou diversos prêmios por seu trabalho. Em 2009, recebeu de Barack Obama uma das mais altas honrarias do país, a Medalha Presidencial de Liberdade. Mas no ano seguinte, ele recebeu um reconhecimento ainda mais raro. Let's remind. Vamos lembrar.
Thank you so much for clicking on me. I'm Mohammed Yunus, founder of the Grameen Bank. And, oh, yeah, I'm also the winner of the Nobel Peace Prize. To find an entrepreneur you want to lend to, click on my nose. If you can catch it, it's up here. Oh, down here. Too slow. Okay, I'm going slow. No, I won't.
This is a big award.
Absolutely, it's a big one.
That's incredible.
Now everybody knows because I'm in Silicon.
Is it your voice?
No, this is not my voice. They made up the voice. But he looks like me.
You're more beautiful.
Yeah, but he's okay. More popular.
By the way, you look so young.
I am young.
You're 83.
83,
not
young.
Not necessarily young, but... incredible.
That's the way you look at it. 83 is a very young age.
Youth is on the eyes of the beholder. Não é só nos Simpsons que o Yunus apareceu. Aqui no Brasil ele foi para a novela das sete. Bom sucesso, 2019. Vamos ver.
E você pode ficar de conversa assim, garçom? Não tem que trabalhar?
Na verdade, quem me arrumou esse emprego foi o meu primo. Enquanto eu faço mestrado de economia, eu tenho uma tese sobre microcrédito de Yunus.
Desculpa.
Pelo visto, meu assunto deve estar chato.
Ai, desculpa, você percebeu.
So, this was probably watched simultaneously by 25 million people.
Wow.
How does fiction can help to change reality?
Yes, I always encourage fiction. I think I was just mentioning that. See, if we imagine, it will happen. If we don't imagine, it will never happen. And that's why I encourage people to see science fiction. Science fiction is the funniest thing that you get. You do anything in space, anything in your life, anything which is impossible to happen. But in science fiction, everything made happen. You're enjoying it. You're doing it. You're going crazy. How did they do it? Because it's imagination. You make a fiction. But after you make the fiction, scientists' minds start working. Why not? You know those mobile phones and all the things we put in our pocket, now we talk, we move. This came in science fiction long before. And people say, hey, this is a great idea. That's the point.
And the power of storytelling.
Absolutely.
That's true. But listen, when you write your book about the three zeros and everything you've been saying today, you propose a major reshape of the whole current economic capitalism.
Very much.
But system. But capitalism is, by its own essence, something that rejects planning. So planning and capitalism are anathema. How to put forward this major reshape?
I will not talk about the planning part of it. There's some planning in capitalism too. It's as an entrepreneur, I plan. Mm-hmm. As a capitalist, I plan how to grab more, mm-hmm. how successfully can go to the market, create new markets. So that I do. That's a plan too. They don't like somebody else to do plan for me. That's what they don't like. That's okay for me, whatever you say. When you talk about capitalism, you imagine the people who are making money. It's a strange capitalism we have. Big capitalists accumulated billions of dollars and trillions of dollars they accumulate, and they do what? They come up with something called people's fund or something like that, that you create a fund, promise your thing that after your death, all your assets will be donated into a fund as a donation so that it can do. See, this what Warren Buffett has done that. That's what Bill Gates have done that. Now probably 189 people in the world, top rich people, signed that giving pledge. This is the word, giving pledge. They signed that after their death, either all the wealth they have earned go to the fund for charity, or half the money, or three-fourths of the money, depending on who you are, But here you are as a lifelong capitalist, but you are signing things, giving up everything. Some of them have even signed for everything should go. Nothing should leave for me. So you accept that you earned wealth, but it can do something better when you are not here. So it's not simply making money, it's a combination of both. That only thing we are explaining to them, like Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, and the 189 people who signed, said you are giving it away. That's wonderful that you're giving it away. Would you like to put it in a social business fund so that this money can be invested in social business? Social business to solve problems. Problems that we see around us all the time. Environment is a problem, unemployment is a problem, the 3-0 that we're talking about, so that we can do as a business where you don't want to take any profit out of it. So only thing you're sacrificing is the profit, nothing else. Otherwise, it's just like any other business and continue to do that. And so it's a question of channeling the fund in the right direction, that's all. That's what we are pleading. We are not saying that you have to disown everything. We are saying that they are saying at the end of your life you do that. Some of them, like Mark Zuckerberg, who's not an old person, he's still a very young person, he given up everything. He said everything goes for charity.
I heard once it was Warren Buffett that said, my children will have enough money to do everything, but they won't have enough money to do anything.
Anything. That's it. Yeah. That's right.
That's reasonable.
And Warren Buffett lives a very simple life.
Yes,
he's not the one having yachts and doing have a fleet of planes or nothing like that. It's a very simple life.
And those problems that you mentioned, once they are solved or addressed, it's good for everyone.
Everybody.
That's it benefits everyone.
That's the point we are trying to raise. Bring it up. That look, ultimately, this is what you're going to do. But put it in your mind. Giving away is one thing, but keeping it doing again and again, because your money will be rolling and rolling to change the world completely. Healthcare, for example. Healthcare is an issue, global problem. People never get good healthcare because it's made expensive by the capitalist business people, or it is promised by the government. Most of the government programs are very badly managed, so you are missed out everything. I said, why don't you create social business? Bring creativity, bring technology, make sure you get every attention possible to you so that you feel comfortable. You don't have to rush around to fill up forms or something, or dish out lots of money to buy something which you could have bought much easily. Because most of the healthcare system are aimed at making money. Even when you're selling medicine which will cost only $1 if you are a proper pricing, but I'm charging you $25 because I know you have to buy this one. You have no escape because you have problem and doctor prescribed you. Doctor said there's no other medicine except this one. This is the one you get. So no matter how much it costs, I have to buy it. So people are taking advantage of my problem to make money. I said, that's the most mean thing to do to people. Why can't we create a social business pharmaceutical company, produce medicine? If it costs us $1, I give you for $1, 10 cents. That's it, 10 cents in the top. And that 10 cents would also go back into the system so that it can produce more medicine like that. Why not? This is what we're talking about. You know, vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine is a very interesting case. When COVID-19 vaccine was about to come, I'm pleading around the world saying that this should be free from intellectual property right. Because the moment you allow them intellectual property right, somebody will make tons of money just because I own it, nobody can touch it, nobody can produce it anymore because I own the ownership. I said, remove this intellectual property right because this is the only way people had to have access to that medicine to be produced by everybody else because you're not restricted to intellectual property right. But we could not succeed. Then what happened? Vaccine came. 80% of all the vaccines produced in the world went to 10 richest countries in the world. 80% of the vaccine produced went to the 10 richest countries. So what happened to the rest of the world? They didn't have access. So their people died without vaccines. And the rich countries which bought it, they had surplus, accumulated, hoarding, and all the things, expired vaccines, but they didn't give up. So I said, this is a very strange situation we created this world for. Here is a direct fight between the life and the money. And money, profit, won. Life is defeated.
Há 10 anos, o professor Yunus escolheu o Brasil para abrigar um dos 6 escritórios de sua articuladora de negócios sociais. Um dos diretores conta para a gente como funciona.
A Yunus Negócios Sociais existe no Brasil desde 2013, então esse ano, em maio, a gente completou 10 anos de atuação profunda aqui no Brasil. A gente já investiu aqui mais de 25 milhões de reais em empreendedores sociais e seus negócios. A gente já trabalhou com mais de 1000 desses empreendedores e criamos projetos com grandes empresas, mais de 60 desses projetos. A gente tem como missão usar o poder dos negócios para combater a pobreza e a crise climática. E é através dos empreendedores, das grandes empresas e dos investidores que a gente faz nosso impacto acontecer. De um lado, a gente tem na operação esse trabalho direto com o empreendedor social, buscando novos negócios e investindo neles. E do outro lado, trabalhando com grandes empresas, apoiando elas a criarem novas estratégias de impacto, novos negócios e produtos ou serviços que elas podem oferecer para dar acesso a serviços para a população brasileira. Dessa forma é que a gente se estrutura no Brasil. E é uma honra e um privilégio carregar este nome do professor Yunus, que é um exemplo para todos nós e que a gente carrega na materialização desses ideais, né? De todos esse ideal de criar o Brasil dos 3 zeros.
Bravo! Why Brazil was one of the 6 countries chosen to have an office of your social business?
I wouldn't say chosen. Brazil came forward.
I see.
See, they took the initiative and we responded. We had no connection with Brazil, Bangladesh, too far away country, language is different. But somehow they took very good interest in our work, so we came in. Not only the few people who took interest got excited about it, people around them got excited about it. Even at that time, President Lula was the president at that time. He invited me to come to his office and discuss this issue of social business and everything what we're doing. So we saw not only at the ground level, also at the very policy level, people were very interested. Universities became interested. They started talking, what should be our role? And that's how this relationship began. That brought me repeatedly to Brazil. I've been thinking that I was in this room before. So it's so familiar. I see the people that we work together, and people say, we saw you 10 years back. Oh, I read your book when I was in school.
But I remind that when you met President Lula 15 years ago, you were critic of the Bolsa Família, the welfare system, transfer income transfer program. Right. Now Lula is back in power and with an even bigger income transfer program. You're still critical of it?
I said it can be done better. That's all I'm saying. I said, why don't you provide a service so that people change their own life? You don't have to run other people's life. Only open the door for them. People are good enough. They're fighters. They're creative. If you give it free to them, hand it over to them, their ability to fight disappears. Because I'm getting easy. I relax and I expect you to do that. Only thing that I'm drawing attention to. I'm not saying you close down. You have an alternative. Alternative and try it out. In one area you do this, another area you do this, which one is doing better? In our experience, we see every time we bring the credit, that society completely changes because they are now discovered they have the ability to do things. It's an important thing about life is discovery, self-discovery. What I have inside of me. You have inside of me unlimited things. So if somebody takes care of you, you remain unknown to yourself. And that's a shame. You had something, you had a treasure, you didn't know you had the treasure. You lived on the kind of a little bits and pieces. That's not what it should be. So that's why I keep talking about this. This is important. Try it. Don't give it up. Even give an option to people whether they want to go through this door or they want to go through this door. I'm not depriving anybody. Simply saying, try it. Whichever works better, they do that. And the children learn from their parents. Oh, my father or my mother, when she was there, she was so extremely poor. She got some money from this and she started this little business. Look what a business she has grown. That's what I'm trying to encourage. And that's why I want to go so that social business can be created to help them to come out of all the problems they have so that they can stand on their feet. And then nobody has to take care of them. They take care of the whole world. They take care of all the problem that we created for the environment. taking care of all the problems that we create for unemployment. All things will go because we redesigned the whole system. And that's the most important thing to do.
Mohamed Yunus veio para o Brasil num momento delicado para ele lá em Bangladesh. De cidadão de honra do país, ele se transformou numa espécie de inimigo número um do governo. Ele veio ao Brasil para lançar o livro O Mundo de Três Zeros, a nova economia de zero pobreza, zero desemprego, zero emissões líquidas de carbono.
I said about the three zeros because we created massive three problems, massive. So big, each one of them is capable of destroying this whole planet. Poverty can destroy this whole planet because wealth goes up, doesn't stay with people, and people at the bottom become bigger number. So the tension and the problem that it creates, it will destroy the whole planet, number one. Number two, all the
unemployment.
Unemployment is going to be worse now because of the artificial intelligence. AI is coming. Today we are having fun with ChatGPT and all the things. Oh, what a wonderful thing we do. But it is becoming bigger and bigger. As it becomes bigger, human beings are replaced by machines. Machine will run everything because they are smarter, they are quicker, and they are cheaper. And of course, the climate. Climate, we don't have much time left before we will be eliminated from this planet. We'll be gone. So these, each one is a major problem. So we have to redesign this planet, redesign this civilization, create the new civilization, which will be based on human values. That's the appeal that I'm making. This will be world of three zeros.
You know, you're very inspirational for so many people around the world. Your voice is heard and echoes. And then back home, in your country, there's this confrontation with the government. Could you briefly explain what
happened? I'll briefly explain. It's a basic thing, one thing, just the politics, dirty politics.
Politics.
That's it. That's the problem. They somehow get it to the head of our prime minister, then I'm kind of political threat to her. Because I'm popular, I'll take over anything, because people believe me, they have trusted me, I've done things for people. So she feels that this is a potential danger.
Threat.
So cut him off. Get them kind of cooked up stories about money laundering or something, transfer all the money. Yeah. So make up stories, put a cases and so
but
on.
But you never had or have political ambitions?
Way back in 2007, there was a military government and so on. People are saying there should be a political government here, and there's no one who can believe people trust. You are the only one who people trust. Finally, I had to yield. Okay, I'll join politics. I said, okay, I'll join politics. So that part that I will join politics kind of situation, that where I agreed to do that, was about 10 weeks. After 10 weeks, when I saw all this chaotic situation, I said, no, politics is not my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. I should not get involved with it. You run whatever politics it is. I run the way I do things, and I feel enjoy it. I can handle it. I know what I'm doing. This, I don't know what I'm doing. So I will not do that. But she did not forget that I tried to join politics and so on.
Mr. Yunus, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
It's been an honor and a real pleasure talking to you. Let me recommend your book once more.
Okay.
A gente fica por aqui com essas grandes lições, as propostas, as provocações bem-vindas de Mohamed Yunus, Prêmio Nobel da Paz, que está lançando no Brasil essa ideia, esse livro que traz a ideia, um mundo de três zeros, uma nova economia, zero pobreza, zero desemprego, zero emissões líquidas de carbono. Nas melhores casas do ramo. Tchau, obrigado.